This is Corporate Cafecito, where we discuss career development and entrepreneurial growth strategies. I'm Mario Rodriguez.
Y yo soy Nayeli Suarez-Guez. Go get your cafecito and let's talk about professional growth. Welcome back to Corporate Cafecito. Yo soy Nayeli Suarez-Guez. Y aquí otra vez de nuevo es JC González Méndez. Welcome back.
Muchas gracias, Nayeli.
In our last episode, JC, we had followed you from meeting Deborah to going to Tec de Monterrey to being the first employee for McDonald's in Mexico to coming to the U.S. to now you're in California and you've graduated from USC and you are moving back to Mexico. The repatriation, they call it. So how was that experience? You said you had gotten there and 3 months later you were now the president of Mexico for McDonald's, right?
So it was incredibly rewarding in many fronts. I was the first employee of McDonald's Mexico and the first Mexican president of the company. Amazing. So I opened restaurant number one and then restaurant number 250, which gave me the opportunity to talk about precisely about opportunity. To my employees, not this is something I heard. You're looking at it.
Yeah.
If you work hard and you keep your nose clean and you do the things that you're supposed to do, you can do this. You can accomplish this. Coming back to Mexico, to the suppliers that I left 12 years before, to some of the employees that I left, it was really invigorating. It was great to go back and see mom and dad and my sisters and brothers. And it was finally the time that my mom said, okay, I agree with you. You did the right thing when you left purchasing and went into the operational side. Because my mom hung up the phone on me 3 times when I was going through my training and I left everything and went into the restaurants to flip burgers. And I remember her asking me, why do you have to do that?
Yeah, she said, well, Mom,
I need to understand the business from the ground up. I said, well, can't somebody just tell you? I says, no, man, I have to do that. I says, is that why we sent you to Tecnológico de Monterrey?
I was just going to say, they were probably like, ¿para eso te mandamos a la escuela?
¿Sí? 3 veces me colgó el teléfono. Pero regresando a México, cuando, obviamente ya manejando una compañía de mucha importancia en México, and we needed to be guarded, and we needed to be with cars, and we needed to be, that's when she said, you know, I think they did the right thing. Our stay in Mexico was extremely good for the children. While they went to the American school, they were exposed to the Mexican culture as well as to the language proficiency that they command today. They're bilingual, bicultural. They're more Mexican than the tortillas. And they're proud of that. Our time in Mexico was very rewarding in that sense, on the personal side, and professionally also. Because I happened to hit Mexico at a very crucial point in their political story, history. That's when Vicente Fox became president. I had an opportunity to meet him in L.A. when I was a member of the Mexican-American Opportunity Foundation, when he was a guest speaker, when he was the governor of Guanajuato. And he said, before I leave the state of Guanajuato, I want to have each and every single one of my schools with a computer before I leave. And I remember that. So when I went back to Mexico and he was elected president, before he was elected president, I sent the people in Mexico the information for them to send some computers to Vicente Fox. They never followed up. So when I came back and I saw that that did not happen, I did it. At least he remembered me and he invited me to his inauguration.
Wow.
An invite that I had to gracefully decline because my second in command that eventually became president of McDonald's Mexico picked us as the godfather for one of their daughters.
Wow.
And to us, it was very important to do that for 2 reasons. Out of respect to my compadre Eddie and for my people to see that you can balance your life with your career, if you put your values and principles first.
And I think when you lead with values, when you lead with family first, it's one thing to say it at work, but to show it, that's huge.
So he takes over. Mexico grows at a 7.5% GDP. There's nothing we can do wrong. Mm-hmm. Our comparable sales increases went up, I think, 18%, 10%, and 20%. We opened over 100 restaurants in 3 years. So people were talking about JC and what he was able to do. Although in Mexico, it was José Carlos. It was interesting because when people call us, I need to talk to JC. Well, aquí no trabaja nadie.
Yeah. No, aquí no hay ni ningún aquí no hay ninguno de esos. Yeah.
So unfortunately, our life in our time in Mexico was cut short because they don't pay you enough so that you want to get out and do other things. Remember, I said I wanted to be an officer of the company. Mm-hmm. I still was not. My very next position is when I became an officer. I was what they call a international relationship partner, and I had seven countries in Latin America under my wing. I had Colombia, Venezuela, Bolivia, Peru, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Chile under my wing. But then I was tired of traveling, and my children were going into high school, and I had missed a lot of the important time, and I thought it was important for me to be home. So I asked for a change. Within 2 weeks, I was the vice president in Chicago, which is a great place to be if you want to be on stage.
Right. Right, because this is headquarters. So
you better bring your dancing shoes because the light's on.
Yeah.
I said yes because that's where the prior two CEOs of the company had gone through on a training. So I did that. My second in command there gave me great advice. I said, Charlie, do you have any words of wisdom to me? He says, yeah. He says, you need to know that you do not run this region. You won't know who does, but as long as you understand that you don't, you'll be okay. And he was right. I came from a country, being a president of McDonald's Mexico, where I met my boss three times. Once when he saw the plans, once when he congratulated us for the great results, and another one because we went duck hunting. That was it. Yeah. I came here to get voicemails and emails on a daily basis of people that were going through the drive-thru and they were understaffed or they were late. I mean, it was constant. But it was a great opportunity for me to show what I was able to do. A few months later, they asked me to go back to supply chain. That was the position that really took me a long time to say yes.
Why?
Because I had left a support department, like marketing or finance or legal, to be on the operational side so that I had the opportunity to manage the P&L, be responsible. But they were so insistent.
Now you're saying words like P&L. So when did you feel strong in your financial acumen?
Well, after I went to
USC.
USC.
Okay.
Yeah. Not. I mean, I'm not an accountant. Nor am I a financial guru, but I know how to read financial statements a little better now.
You know, one of the things I tell people all the time is it's okay to feel stupid, but it is not okay to stay stupid.
Exactly.
And I think that, you know, right now I was like, wait, you said last time financial acumen and now you're talking about P&Ls like you.
Well, you know, another one of the leaders that I learned from was Ronald Reagan. Never met him, but I read a lot about him. And one of the articles that I read on a magazine that my dad had in his night table, a Time magazine, they asked him, so how do you manage to do as well as you do? And he says, it's easy. Every Monday morning when I go to my staff meeting, I want to sit and look around. And if I am not the dumbest of all, I have a problem.
Yeah.
Second, I tell them what needs to be done, never how to do it. That allows them to grow personally and professionally.
Yeah, that's great.
Because I was exposed to so many different disciplines, I knew a little about a lot of things. But not enough to be an expert. So I had to rely on my people. When you delegate responsibility with authority, you're instilling confidence. Then they trust you and they walk through walls for you.
I agree.
So I was able to surround myself with great people and get the results that we did. Mexico at the time was one of the only two countries in Latin America out of almost 30 that were making real money. So people started thinking about it. So going back to supply chain, after 6 months of the president of the U.S. and other people saying, hey, you can make your decision, you can do whatever you want, but we would like you to do this, because Chicago had also been a successful time for me, I buckled and I said, you tell me what you want me to do. Mm-hmm. So I became the chief purchasing officer of the U.S., and then U.S. and Canada, now managing about $11 billion of goods and services.
Quite a growth from $1 million a day.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? Yeah. I had probably the most experienced staff I've ever worked with in terms of their schooling, their abilities, their capabilities. I mean, I had, my numbers may be wrong, but I think I had out of 35 people that I had, I grew to 52 because of the magnitude of the job that we needed to do. I had 6 PhDs, wow, about 12 MBAs. I don't know how many accountants. So people that were really smart at what they were doing. And once again, I tell them what needed to be done,
but not how to do it.
Almost never how to do it. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a few years, and then I became senior vice president. I was already an officer. And when McDonald's sold the business in Latin America, they wanted a new president of McDonald's, somebody that had recognition of being a leader, but that had a relationship with the largest franchisee in the world. Arcos Dorados owns 2,400 restaurants.
Wow.
It's the largest franchisee in the world.
Arcos Dorados, great.
Yeah. And so I became president of McDonald's Latin America. Mm-hmm. And I did that from about 4 years. I was lucky enough to be part of that company that became, from being private to become public. I went through the listing process. I was at New York on the floor when they were ringing the bell. I learned quite a bit about that process. And after we had a great year, I was coming out of the room where the CEO, Don Thompson, at the time, who I had been reporting to directly for 10 years, who had given me the greatest raving review and allotted the highest ever rating for any area of the world in terms of bonus.
Wow.
I said, Don, this is a great training ground because it's $5 billion in sales, is really small. You can use it for training of future
leaders.
If you want me to do anything else, you tell me, I'll move. I was about to get up when he said, sit down. He says, I'm going to share with you something that I shouldn't, but I need to. Mm-hmm. I am going to be the next CEO. And I want to bring the brand ambition of good food, being served by good people, by being a good neighbor, to reality. And I want to create the new office of the global corporate social responsibility / sustainability, diversity and inclusion, community engagement, and philanthropy for McDonald's, and I want you to do it. And as part of that, I want you to be president and CEO of Ronald McDonald House Charities globally.
Wow.
That was, to me, the hook. I didn't know what it meant, but I wanted the chance to change the world and do that. So I said yes. I think months later is when this happened.
I'm going to stop you for a little bit because you said, I wanted the chance to change the world. I feel like you don't give yourself enough credit. I know you said sometimes you step back and say, wow. But when you did that work in California, I'm getting a little choked up. I guarantee you, you changed the world there.
I appreciate you saying that. The way I measure my success is when I turn my back and I see how many people are following me. And the fact that so many people, when we go to Southern California, and so many people still look for us, and I say us because it's Deborah. I am the husband of. It's very rewarding. And I did it because it's the right thing to do. But also, I realized early on in my career that McDonald's was not a hamburger business selling to people. It's a people business that happens to be selling hamburgers.
Gracias. Gracias por tomarte tu cafecito con nosotros. If you're enjoying this, please leave a review wherever you listen.
Share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and also at corpcafecito.com. Let us know what you'd like to hear or if you'd like to be part of our show.
So we talked about that a little bit during one of our breaks, and we mentioned how we use McDonald's as a comfort food. We use it as an emotional connection. So I think that that's very relevant with what you're saying now. Like it's not a hamburger place. It's a celebration place. Absolutely. Or after the doctor place.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is.
So how did that role go?
That was probably my first 6 months on that role were the most challenging I've ever had, because there was nothing in writing. There was no job description. There was no staff. There was no, I mean, there was some staff on the different departments that, but there was no cohesion in what we were doing, what we were saying. But the beauty of it was that they didn't exist.
Yeah.
I could put it together.
Dawn, that's what you do pretty much everywhere you go.
Correct.
I think Dawn
was very smart, because when he said the corporate social responsibility, that includes McDonald's. When you talk about McDonald's carbon footprint, 70% of it is created by supply chain. So check on that box, right? I ran supply chain, so check. Diversity and inclusion, well, you're looking at it.
Right.
I didn't say, but I've sat on a dozen boards, National Council of La Raza, Council of the Americas, the Mexican American Opportunity Foundation, the Tomás Rivera Policy Institute. I was the chairman of the Hispanic Steering Committee of McDonald's for 8 years. So I had been there.
Yep.
I was the sponsor of the African American network in LA. So I had that. So another box, check. The other one is community engagement. The fact that I sat on so many boards, but I also was founder and president of the Ronald McDonald House Charities chapter in Mexico. We opened the first house. We opened the second, the third. I sat on the board in Chicago. I sat in LA. So check. All of those things. So he wanted somebody that had, and then if he wanted to make an impact in the entire world, he needed to have somebody that had the credibility with the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And having been in charge of a large P&L of an area of the world gave me that. Because in talking to the president of the U.S. or the president of Europe or Asia Pacific gave me that credibility, because I was not asking them to do things that I did not know.
Right. What impact it was things that you had done.
So it was a challenging 6 months. We hosted what we called the meeting, the Vision 2020, making allusion to the 2020 year. This was 2013, but also to the perfect vision of 2020.
Right.
And we had over 80 people attending, from operations, supply chain, quality assurance, communications, legal. We had people from all areas of the world. And then we had pundits. We invited people from PETA. We invited people from Greenpeace, people that had things to say about McDonald's. Not because we were going to do what they wanted us to do, but it was important for them to see that we were willing to listen.
Yes.
And to do the things, or put plans to do the things that they wanted us to do, at least to the extent that we could.
You could, yeah.
That meeting was a tremendous success, and it was the beginning. Because doing good at McDonald's is part of the DNA. But in those 6 months, we scanned the world to see what initiatives were being taken care of around the world, to see what we could duplicate. We came back with over 200 pages worth of initiatives. Because at McDonald's, a lot of people think that it's a global company. It's really local. It's global in mindset, local in execution.
Local in execution, yeah.
So what makes sense in the U.S. to do in the community may not make any sense in Latin America, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it was important to get at least a framework. And after those 6 months and then a year of work with a lot of different boards, we put together our first ever sustainability framework with five pillars: food, where the food came from, what we served, people, community, and planet. And all areas of the world said, those are the five that we're going to...
Those resonated with everybody.
Now let's put some strategies and tactics underneath that we can all live by. And that was another task. And once we did, is not put some targets. Mm-hmm. Now sell it to management. Now sell it to the board. Because it was important to do the right things, but then to get the recognition.
Right.
To get the recognition, you have to publish. If you want to publish, your legal department is very cautious about it, rightfully so, to make sure that you're not saying something you cannot validate.
Right.
So it was a process. But today you go into McDonald's website and the report on carbon and the report on sustainability is second to none. And I am happy to say that I was one of the pioneers in doing that. I don't take the credit at all. I was a cheerleader. I was the individual that opened the door for the people that were working on it.
You were the Ronald Reagan.
Pardon?
You were the Ronald Reagan.
Correct.
You sat in the room
all differences. I was the blocker. I was the nose guard, let's say.
Yeah.
I needed to open the doors for them so they could do what I knew they could do.
So I know you don't work for McDonald's anymore. When did you leave and why did you leave?
I left in 2015.
So right after this summit.
Yeah. The summit was actually 2014. So I stayed a full year.
Another year.
Early in 2015, there was a board meeting when Don Thompson, the CEO, decided to leave. And that morning, I texted Deborah, Don is leaving and so am I. I didn't know the particulars, but I knew that my mentor, a gentleman that I still hold in very high esteem, very human, very incredible, transparent, charismatic leader, was going to leave. What the board had asked the new CEO to do was going to relegate my job to second importance. I'm very proud. So I needed to call it quits, or somebody was going to ask me to call it quits.
Call it quits, yeah.
So I announced that I was leaving in March, and they asked me to stay through June and eventually through December. So I left because people leave people. People work for people, not for company.
Yes.
And my work was going to be relegated to second importance, and I was not ready to do that. What we were doing was so important, but I was losing my champion. And without that champion, it was going to be almost impossible. McDonald's had been so good to us that we could do it. I was only 55. But I have no regrets. I still have a lot of friends. As a matter of fact, we're hosting 62 of them on Saturday at home.
Oh, nice. What time's the party? I'll just show
12
up.
12 noon. Because it's important. The greatest memories we have is of the people that work at McDonald's. As I said, we have zero regrets. Still have a lot of friends. Still have business with McDonald's. My consulting firm has helped minority-owned businesses go through the McDonald's gridlock to get approval. Once again, in the community side.
Yeah.
I have a soft side for helping people that don't necessarily have a voice. So that's why I left. But I've been involved in a lot of things since I left in 2015.
So as I look back at your career, some of the stories, you know, I have little notes all over here. I have like Pat Flynn and I have Deborah. And I think one of the things I liked is you said at this summit, you invited like PETA and some of the others and you wanted to make sure you listened. And I think back to that manager who let you bring your sheet and let you listen. Like, what are some other maybe leadership traits that you've seen that you're like, you know what, I had a moment and this one stuck with me, or this is the type of leadership that I have. And I if I were saying them about you, JC, I would say you're a very visible leader, right? You lead from the front, you do the work. I like the idea of telling people what to do, not how to do it. I think that's a very amazing leadership principle. What are some of the other ones or other things that you'd like to share with our audience?
So every time I got a promotion and I had a new job from President of Mexico on, the very first memo that I sent is one that I titled, What You Can Expect From Me and What I Expect From You. And it was a list of my values and principles, what I expected. And to me, it was extremely important to talk about professionalism, ethics, integrity, communication, teamwork, sharpening the saw, a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. And then I would put emphasis on integrity. My most important value is integrity, because what you do is so loud that I can hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
The closer you're doing is to what you are saying, the more predictable and the more transparent you are, and then people gravitate towards that.
Yes.
They know that you mean what you say and you say what you mean. I think that's important, to tell people what you expect from them, but what they can expect from you. And I did that on every single one of my roles.
I think that's really important, because they get to know you without, you know, you're right. Integrity is something that you see through actions. But to tell people, this is what I value, also tells them, like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And
but I also made emphasis to the fact that you need to have one set of values, not two. I don't subscribe to the notion that you have personal values and then you have your professional values. If you don't think that your personal life has any impact on your professional life, ask Tiger Woods.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, no, you're right.
So to me is, and one of my problems is, I lose respect for people that don't have integrity. To me is the most precious trait.
I agree. And you know, I think a lot of times when we say integrity, people don't often know what it means. But I tell people, it's not that I want you to always do things the right way and on the first try and everything. Instead, I want you to know that when you mess up, you can say, I messed up. Mm-hmm. That's integrity too. Correct. Telling people, like, I messed up, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Or as we say in Mexico, la regué.
Correct. Yeah, one of the things that I ask my people is, don't let me make a bad decision because I'm lagging information.
Yeah.
But once I make a decision, I expect you to be behind me. Don't withhold any information. Tell me everything.
Yeah.
But then respect the decision that I make.
Yeah.
I can make decisions, but you need to listen, because you can't possibly know everything.
Right.
And if you don't listen to your people, why would you have them?
Yeah. I mean, there's no worse way than to break down a team than to not listen to them.
And that trait of listening, my mom used to say, there's a reason why you have two ears and one mouth. You need to listen twice as long as you speak. That lesson on Pat Flynn, when he listened, was very instrumental when we got an urgent email from Europe when I was the chief sustainability officer, and Greenpeace was threatening to boycott McDonald's in Europe because we had failed to comply with the law or what we had promised on the elimination of the CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons, the Freon on refrigeration systems. And they want to know what we're going to do. So I started Googling Greenpeace, who is it, who's managing. And I noticed that the CEO of Greenpeace was Noumi Kumi Naidu, a South African black that fought during the apartheid. I said, my CEO is black, and he is from Cabrini, on the south side of Chicago. He was fatherless, and he was educated by his grandmother, and he's a man of integrity. We're not going to do anything. We're going to go and listen to Kumi Naidu. Mm. We flew to Amsterdam to meet with Kumi Naidu to see what the issue was. Mm-hmm. The meeting was supposed to last 20 minutes. They were there for 3.5 hours, and then they had dinner.
Oh, wow.
Greenpeace never boycotted McDonald's. All they wanted is to be listened to.
Yeah.
But we show respect by going there, right? But to me, I said, an African-American that fought not the apartheid, but that understands the problem, the racial issues, the injustices, that they can talk to each other. And they did. And they became good friends.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to listening, to empathy, to being relatable, and integrity.
Another thing is that I wouldn't ask anybody to do something I wouldn't do. One of my pet peeves is walking through in front of the fryer when there's a French fry on the floor. If you don't pick it up, people will not pick it up. If you do, maybe they'll think about picking it up. And I learned that from listening to Ray Kroc. when he would pick up the trash from around the neighborhood. My wife used to joke at me because I would be parked at Walmart and we're picking up the McDonald's French fries carton.
You're like, this is...
I said, you're nuts. He gets into you.
Yeah.
It's a way of living.
It does.
And either you show it or you don't. I remember telling my people, I says, you need to understand that you're on all the time.
All the time.
You never see Ronald McDonald with his 2 feet up and puffing off a cigar because he's on stage. So are you. And your people are looking at you. And your people are, at best, going to emulate you.
Right.
So the way you talk, the way you address them, the way you treat people, they're going to be paying attention.
And they're going to see you and they're going to remember the good and the bad. But this is how you make the other leaders, by showing them, by leading by example, to me is just so huge.
Correct. Correct.
I want to thank you for joining us again and sharing your experience. I was, like I said, I was blown away when I first met you. And I was like, you have to tell your story because people need to hear, one, as we say, si se puede porque si se pudo.
Claro.
And also because I believe it's really important to understand the value of laterals and getting that breadth of experience.
Absolutely.
I always said, like, I liked being able to have laterals because when I took a step up, nadie me tumba for what I know.
People need to understand, I always use this analogy, is the road to success, I said, is not a toll road. I mean, it's a toll road, not a freeway, but it's also not a straight line. And sometimes you have to go backwards to go forward. Sometimes you have to go sideways. But at the end of the day, what is success if you don't have to fight for it?
Right.
How would a triumph feel if you didn't have a battle? The harder it gets, the greater the satisfaction
of
your accomplishment.
Yes.
So at the end of the day is you need to know that you need to work hard. It's going to be difficult, but it's going to be well worth the effort. But it's not for free. There's some things you're going to have to give up. I can't tell you how regretful I am of all of the things that I missed of my children. That's why today, with my grandchildren, is different.
You guys are always different with the nietos.
Well, you have to, because you can.
Yeah.
It's not that when you are the parents you don't want to, you can't.
You can't. You're working.
I was traveling 2 weeks out of the month.
And you're also disciplining and, doing all those things with the grandkids. It's a different type of discipline.
Correct.
Which I say is none, according to my parents. Thank you for coming, for sharing your story. I know that I'm incredibly humbled to hear your story and to have you be here. So we welcome you back anytime to Corporate Cafecito. And yeah, thank you for being here.
Muchas gracias por el cafecito.
No, and by the way, he is drinking an iced latte with regular milk, and I have it with coconut milk. So, and Mike has coconut milk too. So, all right. Well, aquí los esperamos la próxima vez. Yo soy Nayeli Suárez Gas, y nos vemos la próxima.
Hasta luego y muchas gracias.
Corporate Cafecito was produced in beautiful downtown Oak Park at Boulevard Studio. Audio engineer and editor is Mike Mitchell.
We're available on every podcast platform.